And you're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our show is your connection to local performances. Coming up on the show, music from Les Miserables in the production by the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. We've got some live performers who are joining us in the studio for some highlights, and that show will open on the 22nd of February, next Friday. But first, I'll be talking with Steve Wiedenhofer, who is the director of One Voice, which is the premier vocal jazz group at Millikan University in Decatur. They are hosting their 24th Vocal Jazz Festival with groups from high schools and colleges from throughout Illinois and elsewhere. And looking forward to that conversation as well. Here is vocal jazz from Millikan, One Voice. It's called My Romance.
My romance doesn't have to have a moon in the sky. My romance doesn't need a blue lagoon standing by. No.
My Romance, the name of that song, and it's sung by One Voice, the flagship vocal jazz ensemble at Millikan University in Decatur. There is going to be a vocal jazz festival on campus there tomorrow, starting at 8 in the morning, running until 5 in the afternoon. It's actually free. People can pop in and out. A lot of different high school and collegiate vocal jazz ensembles will be participating. And the director of One Voice, and I think the coordinator of the festival, is Steve Wiedenhofer, who's also director of the School of Music there as well. Steve, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This is the how manyth year for the Vocal Jazz Festival?
This is the 24th year that we've had a festival specifically devoted towards to vocal jazz ensembles.
That sounded like a bit of a hedge, meaning that there's been other jazz festivals.
Oh yeah, I mean Millikan for years and years had an instrumental jazz festival where high school jazz bands would come up, they'd compete. It was competitive, and I think Roger Schuler started that probably in the 70s, And it was a popular festival. We kept it going. And then when I took over the jazz festival, and then eventually there just were so many festivals happening that we weren't getting as many groups to come, so we kind of dropped the instrumental portion of it but stuck with the vocal because there's nobody else really doing anything like that around Midwest.
Really? That seems sort of incredible. You'd think that would happen.
Well, there's some small pockets of there's a couple of festivals that are happening now in Illinois that I should say that have popped up in the last 5 to 10 years. One's in St. Charles, up by Chicago, and the other one also up by Chicago is in Skokie, Niles North High School. But basically, a festival like ours, there's really this is by far the biggest one in the Midwest.
So before we talk about the festival itself, because I'm very curious about what all goes on and what people can attend publicly, tell me a little bit about Vocal Jazz at Millikan, one voice billed as the flagship ensemble, which implies there are others.
Well, we always have two groups. We've actually had three in the past, but most often we just have two. I started this back in like 1986 as kind of a lab experience. There was no class credit attached to it. I just invited people who were interested to come and you know, we'd rehearse a couple hours a week, a couple times a week, and just kind of see what we could do and kind of created interest that way. But at that point, we had a very popular show choir and the show choir program, and so it was a nice contrast to that. You know, one thing led to another, and eventually it became an ensemble for class credit, and we auditioned, and we had some really good success with a couple recordings. We were invited to the International Association of Jazz Educators Conference in San Diego in the late 80s, and then in New York City in the early 2000s. That organization eventually actually went defunct, but in its place, Jazz Educators Network came to be, and it's about a five-year-old organization, and we were invited to sing at their national conference last year. So we've had some pretty good success doing invitational performances and that sort of thing over the years.
Well, let's hear another tune from One Voice. This is called Waltz for Debbie, and this actually features a solo all the way through, along with the rest of everybody's unaccompanied here. There's no instruments at all, and the other voice is accompanying her, essentially.
That's a beautiful arrangement of a great Bill Evans tune.
And who's the singer?
The singer is Jessica Golden. Actually, the recordings that you're playing were done 4 years ago. These people are all seniors now. I've had them for 4 years. But that she's a freshman when she sang that.
Wow, it's a beautiful job.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Waltz for Debbie, One Voice, who are going to be appearing at the Vocal Jazz Festival at Millikan University tomorrow, pretty much all day long. Details in a moment on Live and Local.
In her own sweet world, populated by dolls and clowns and a prince and a big purple bell, lives my favorite girl, unaware of the worried frowns that we weave. Silent music, songs that were spun of gold, somewhere in her own little head. One day, all too soon, she'll grow up and she'll leave her dolls and her prince and her silly old bear. When she goes, they will cry as they whisper goodbye. They will miss her, I fear, but then so will I. Do 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 do.
Waltz for Debbie from One Voice, the premier vocal jazz group at Millikan University, featuring as the soloist Jessica Golden. And the Vocal Jazz Festival at Millikan, the 24th such event, is happening tomorrow from 8 to 5 at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center on campus. Stephen Wiedenhofer is director of One Voice and coordinator for the festival. So there's, about 25 high school and college groups from what sort of distance coming
in? Well, we have a group from Milwaukee, a couple from Missouri, one from southern Indiana, and the rest are from Illinois.
And so, how do they get involved?
Well, I think a lot of it's word of mouth. We have a lot of repeat groups that come here because they just enjoy the educational facet of it. But we publicize it. We send out postcards to the about four states, all the high schools, and try to drum up some interest. But we are getting to the point now that we almost have to limit the number of groups. We really can't get any bigger, otherwise we'd be starting about 7 in the morning, and that's just not good. So but it's I'm really pleased to see how it's grown, and I think the thing is the educational facet of it. Our groups, each group gets about 15 minutes on Kirkland stage, and we have a very 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 nice sound system, professionally run, and so they get to usually most of them do three tunes, and then they go to a clinic room off stage with one of our very fine clinicians, and they work with them for about a half hour on their music, and the clinicians kind of rotate in and out then that way. But it's that's the nice piece of it. It's really a really nice educational day for everybody.
So that's the educational part, but the whole thing is open to the public, who can just come in and listen in all day long?
They can come in and listen to any group they want. They can come and go as they please. We just ask them to be quiet when they leave or when they come in, but usually it's in between the performances, so it's not a problem. And we would love to have as many people as possible. We're going to do our show at about 1:15. We'll do about a 40-minute set in the middle of the day.
And by we, that's One Voice, of course.
One Voice, correct.
And it's free. There's no ticket required
or
anything.
No ticket required,
correct. People can just pop in and out.
Yep.
The Vocal Jazz Festival at Millikan, tomorrow from 8 to 5, anytime you want. Just go in and listen and stay all day if you want, and be your own critic.
There you go.
Although you won't get your comments registered, I'm sure. I'm going to go out with one here that's called Will You Still Be Mine, sort of keeping up on the post-Valentine's theme. And you got a rhythm combo with this one.
Yeah, actually most of the music that we do is with rhythm section. I say of a normal concert, but we might do two a cappella tunes.
Oh.
Most of it is with rhythm section.
Okay. Well, here's a sample.
Okay.
One Voice, directed by Steven Wiedenhofer, who's been my guest this portion of Live and Local. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When lovers make no rendezvous, to stroll along Fifth Avenue, when this familiar world is through, will you still be mine?
So travel around the park.
City's One Voice Vocal Jazz Ensemble, Will You Still Be Mine? Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our next segment here on Live and Local has to do with a musical that most of you have probably heard of, Les Miserables. It's going to be produced by the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, opening on Friday, February 22nd, and running through Sunday, March the 3rd. It would be hard to imagine that many of our listeners haven't either seen the show, read the novel, or maybe even have gone out and seen the movie and not having seen the show before. And I know I went and saw the movie pretty recently. I've been involved with productions of the show, seen several productions. It remains the only show I've ever seen on Broadway, only musical I've ever seen on Broadway somehow or another. And so I've really been looking forward to this conversation today with five of the folks involved in the Little Theater's production, and four of them are going to sing for us live in the studio. Sort of standing in for the executive director, John Stevens, and also for the stage director, Kelly Shook, is somebody who's in the cast as in the usually comical, and I presume still comical, role of Madame Thénardier, even though she's
God, I hope so.
Not a particularly nice person, but we make it. But I'm sure Therese Kincaid is a very nice person. And John tells me you're going to be sort of the spokesperson for the production.
I will be the business voice.
The business voice. Well, the first order of business that I'm interested in is just a little bit about the stage director. She comes from New York, and I know a lot of the casts for little theater productions tend to come from New York, but a lot of other places as well. What can you tell us about her?
Well, I will tell you in general about the cast, and then I'll let Carla speak a little bit about Kelly. But this is a cast of 31. There are three local children and varying levels of professionals beyond that. But we are from New York, Chicago, and Central Illinois. And
which of those places do you hail from?
I hail from Charleston, Illinois.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Originally from Chicago, but I've lived in Charleston for many years.
How about that? Mm-hmm. So how did you get involved in this one? I mean, I assume that everybody, there was some sort of audition involved, or were there some sort of invitation?
Yes. I did not have to audition for this one. I am now a full-time employee at the Little Theater on the Square. I'm the director of youth programming. And I've done shows off and on since 1998 at the Little Theater. And just in the last year and a half have become sort of a, what did somebody call me the other day? A local favorite. I said, is that a good thing? You know? But anyway, so they asked me to do this particular part, and I couldn't be more thrilled. As far as Kelly Shook, the director, I will let Carla, her sister.
Let me introduce, I mean, Carla Shook is in the role of Fantine.
Yes.
Another this cast is related to you as well?
Older Cosette is my cousin.
Older Cosette, yeah. As opposed to little Cosette or young Cosette.
Yes.
And that's, Amelia Millar.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll introduce the other two folks who are with us in a bit. But yeah, so tell us all about your sister and be nice.
My sister and I get along very well. I think she's spectacular at what she does. She began in this business as a performer as well and still performs. And she's done a lot of choreography and dance captaining and directing and has really, the last couple years, pushed the directing side of what she wants to do. And she directed this summer at the Little Theater, Pirates of Penzance and Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. And to great success, and they liked her, and so they had her come back, and she just actually directed and wrote the Christmas show that actually all of us were involved with a couple months ago. And now she's back to kind of reimagine Les Mis for the Little Theater space. And I think we would all agree she's done a great job. I would say we're pretty much ready to go. We need a set now and the orchestra and all the pieces, and we still have a full week of rehearsal. We spent a lot of time with the music, and we're kind of all fascinated at how fast we kind of just got it up on its feet, and we've been able to really find some nice moments and really tell the story. And she's used the space very well for 31 people with an orchestra on the stage. You know, we're condensed a little bit.
Well, you just fed me a whole bunch of questions, Dad. I don't know if I'll remember all of them, but I guess the first one has to do with reimagining the show for the space, because for those who haven't been to the Little Theater on the Square, it's not named the Little Theater because it's small. It's That's named right. for a guy named Guy Little, yeah. But it is small.
Yes.
Small stage. And, you know, I don't have any idea what theater I saw it in on Broadway, and I really don't remember what size the cast was, but I do seem to remember maybe it wasn't huge for that either. Is it sort of typical to use a small cast? Any idea?
I don't know the exact numbers. I know there's a current tour out right now that has like 28 people on it, I think is the head count.
Mm-hmm.
And
which means you're going to have a lot of people in the chorus, so to speak, doubling up.
Absolutely. They're prisoners, and then they're the bishop, and then they're an ABC student leading the revolution. And there's going to be a lot of costume changes happening very fast.
So the reimagining part, I mean, is that only to fit the space, or is that to give it a different look?
A little of both, I think. The original production used a turntable. Which,
pretty famously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so we don't have a turntable. But we do have, according to the plans and the drawings, a pretty spectacular barricade that will come in that the guys climb on and some of them perish on.
I think the 25th anniversary tour did not have the turntable. I think they were the beginning of not using that turntable.
They still have it in the London production.
Do they?
They still use it there.
Mm. And the turntable, for those who don't know what we're talking about, has nothing to do with spinning records or LPs. But it has to do with a stage mechanism by which you can turn the set around. I mean, 360 degrees, essentially.
And bring
it can
people
be really
on
dramatic,
off.
Yeah, and have been very effective and makes for. Because the show is through composed, it's all sung, it's essentially an opera, which means there are no scene changes.
Correct.
I remember this from doing the music for it, and they said, well, can you provide some scene change music? Here's it. No. You have to get it done.
Make it happen.
Yes.
You have four measures.
That's right. So it's a challenge that way. But what about some of the other, I mean, is it like that you'll have the traditional costumes and some of the traditional, what have become the traditional looks
for
this show?
We do have a lot of the traditional looks. We're renting a lot of the principal costumes from a place in upstate New York. So they're en route now. I can't wait to put them on. And they've borrowed some costumes from Millikan University.
Mm-hmm. And then we have some of our stock, and Timmy Valentine, the costume coordinator, is putting all of that together to make it gorgeous.
Yeah. I have some other follow-up questions, but I think we should hear some music.
Sure.
I don't have any idea who's going to go first.
I believe Ruthie is going to start us off.
Ruthie in the role of Eponine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everybody is a tragic character. In
it's
some
true.
Way
yes.
or another.
Yep.
Possibly with the exception of Marius.
I think he goes
through a lot of loss.
He goes through a lot. He goes well. That yeah, of course, that's true. Yes, exactly. And it's one of the more poignant moments.
But compared
of the show,
to the rest
too.
Of them, it kind of first
world
problem.
Yes. Yeah,
yeah. At least he's alive.
There's yeah. two at the end.
He does live to the end of the show. Yes.
So, Ruthie, why don't you tell us what you're going to do, and for those who haven't seen the show, or just a reminder for those who have, what's the lead up to this song?
Well, Eponine is kind of tragic. But what I like about her character is she's very optimistic, even to the end. Even in her demise, she is still seeing the best of the situation. And she is in love with Marius, but Marius is not in love with her. He's in love with Cosette. So she is his friend, comrade, and this is a moment in the show when she's telling the audience how she feels about him, but how she can never reveal it to him.
But at the same time, I'm projecting it at the end. She reveals it to him at the very end when she's dying,
mm-hmm.
of course.
And yeah. I think he knows, but she's quite guarded about her feelings towards him.
Okay. Ruthie Stevens in the role of Eponine from Les Miserables, and the song is On My Own. And this is from the Little Theater on the Square production that will open on the 22nd as a Friday and run through March 3rd.
World will go on turning, a world that's full of happiness.
him. I love him, but only
Ruthie Stevens in the role of Eponine from Les Miserables, the Little Theater on the Square production that will be opening in Sullivan, Illinois on February the 22nd, On My Own, the name of that song. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. There's one person we haven't introduced in our cast here so far. But because I want to sort of address this next question to everybody here, we might as well let everybody know that he is, in fact, here. Tim Courtier in the name of Marius.
Yes.
Who, of course, is Cosette's love interest. I mean, we introduced your character by way of introducing this last song, of course. Ruthie Stevens, we just heard from Amelia Millar in the role of Cosette, and Carlos Lucas Fontaine, and then also with us, Therese Kincaid in the role of Madame Thénardier. I read on the fount of wisdom that is Wikipedia that apparently when this show first opened in 1985 in London, it was not reviewed well, mm-hmm. which I hadn't realized, and it picked up through word of mouth, to say the very least. It picked up just a bit, and 40 years later is still going on all over the world. What do you all think is the appeal of, on one hand, the story, and on the other hand, of the musical presentation of the story?
I have to say just quickly that my husband, when we met, was not a fan of musicals necessarily.
His
opinion was, why do people bust out in song for no apparent reason? And he didn't get that. And now the more that he hangs out with me, he has changed his opinion. And this is his favorite musical.
Really?
Yes. And I asked him this morning. I said, why? What is it? And he said, I think the idea that there are all of these people in a tragic circumstance, and even though you think it might not work out for them, there's such hope and there's such feeling, even of the students who are in a battle, that they're throwing themselves into this. That, along with the music, that it's hard to even describe how involving and uplifting that music is. And so that's what I believe is, for me as well, the description, that it just brings you in. And I've heard a criticism, somebody who didn't particularly like it as well said it was sort of repetitive. And I thought,
musically,
but you
speaking.
See, yes, but you see, that's what's so wonderful about it. When you start to hear that theme, mm-hmm. it makes you realize who it is now that is going to be singing, sort of operatic in its way then. And so
well, I was going to say, if you take a Wagner opera,
exactly,
goes on for 5 hours, it's pretty repetitive.
It's pretty repetitive.
Intentionally in
yeah.
that case,
it's
and I'm
just
sure here too.
Beautiful, and it.
It's such a strong story of love and devotion, I guess is the best way to put it. Of all,
and you're
of
referring
these,
to the musical,
the
or
musical, no, and the novel. We all mm-hmm. we all made it through.
I was going to ask if you had or not.
Yes, it's a very long book.
Yeah, I'm still working on it, but I'm slowly but surely getting through.
Did you even make it through all the historical and editorial asides? That it's like a quarter of the book or something like that.
I skimmed a couple of those.
Yeah.
I will admit, I was really like stressed and was like, I have to do it, and I was like, but why? You're not writing a paper. You just want the information
want the
for
sense.
Yourself.
Yeah.
I did the same thing, by the way.
You know?
Enough education already, but okay. Yeah. So,
but all of the circumstances that these characters are put into, in what great lengths they're willing to go for the people they love. Mm-hmm. Fontaine gives her life for her child. Her story in the book is, she's a horribly tragic, tragic character that kind of propels the whole story. If you're not familiar with it, and Jean Valjean, who got in a bad place early on to help out his sister's starving children. And then just from then on, everything he does is to protect this little girl that he calls her own. Eponine gives her life for Marius' sake. All of the revolution boys, everybody, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. you know, I think that speaks to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Jean Valjean's whole journey for redemption that you follow him, and because you see him in the darkest place in his life, which is the show opens when he's still in jail. And so as he's leaving, and he's on parole now, he goes back out into the world and his dark heart is still making him choose these bad decisions in life. And finally, when he showed some kindness, just from one singular person giving him the opportunity to go out and be nice and be the person that he once was, I think that's something that speaks to a lot of people. And I know for me, I think it's very poignant that one singular person and one moment of generosity can then propel Jean Valjean to do the rest of the good that he does in the rest of the show. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important and can speak a lot of volumes to people.
And of course, the crime he commits in the first place
mm-hmm.
was one out of caring.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's stealing a loaf of bread. It's not as if he, you know, punched someone or caused a fight or anything. He stole a loaf of bread to feed his sister's starving children.
In a way, that's the one absurdity of the whole story,
yeah.
you know, of the novel in the first mm-hmm. place is that, you know, this guy is hunted down by this ridiculous inspector for his entire life, mm-hmm. just, you know, for this one reason. What do you make of this character of Javert, who we don't have with us today?
Oh.
For those who don't know, he's the inspector who hunts down Jean Valjean every place he goes. It seems to be obsessed, although in the novel it's more a bit more circumstantial.
Yes.
At times he keeps running into him, which is also
I think his identity becomes so blended with Jean Valjean. I mean, he becomes so obsessed with trying to catch him that he doesn't know who he is anymore by the end of his role in the play. His whole identity is about catching him, and when he can't, he doesn't know what else to do with his life.
But he's one of those people that is very black and white.
Right. And he thinks that what he's doing is right, just as Jean Valjean thinks that what he's doing is also correct. Mm-hmm. And I think in a sense they both are correct, but I think Javert refuses to find the middle ground of spiritual goodness as well as law-abiding goodness. And I think that's what ultimately causes his demise, is that when he finally does reach that breaking point of trying to find goodness versus law abiding, that he can't handle it. He, in essence,
he's finally like shown mercy, and he doesn't mm-hmm. know what to do with that like emotional response.
Mm-hmm. Well, he has the opposite response to Valjean's. You know,
yes. Yes.
Valjean was faced that when he encountered the bishop, and he took one path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Javert faced it, you know, at mm-hmm. the hands of Valjean, and then for some reason he's got this flaw, I guess, his tragic flaw.
Yes.
He can't move on from there.
And maybe that's the base of what makes this successful. We all want to be Valjean. Mm. We all hope that we can be the way he is. Mm-hmm. If shown kindness, we hope that we can rise above and forgive all those who have treated us so horribly. And it's difficult. It's very difficult.
I wonder if Victor Hugo doesn't provide sort of a long but extraordinarily eloquent answer to this whole question. This was something I found he says toward the end of the novel. I don't remember this because it was an awfully long novel. But this is what he writes himself in the book. And he's addressing the book, actually, itself. Quote, "The book which the reader has before him at this moment is, from one end to the other in its entirety and details, a progress from evil to good, from injustice to justice, from falsehood to truth, from night to day, from appetite to conscience, from corruption to life, from bestiality to duty, from hell to heaven, from nothingness to God. The starting point, matter, destination, the soul. The hydra at the beginning, the angel at the end." Unquote.
Wow.
So it's like somebody reviewing his own book. Yeah.
By the way, in case you're wondering, this is what it's about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
We should put that on the poster.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of on the poster, something else I read somewhere along the line. You know, there's always that iconic picture that shows uh-huh. up in every production. Do you know where it came from?
Oh, yes. I just recently learned this.
There was an art. There was a piece of art that somebody drew for Victor Hugo or his novel of little.
The first edition, the original publication. Mm-hmm. It's in there.
It's in there.
And I thought it was just something that was somebody drew for the first production of the musical, and it turns out the first novel.
It's a fuller picture of her mopping or sweeping or something, and then they just took the face of it and colorized it and whatever. Mm-hmm.
We're talking with members of the cast of the Little Theater on the Square production of Les Misérables. It's going to open in Sullivan Friday, February 22nd. It'll continue through Sunday, March 3rd. And they're here in part to sing us some songs, and so we might as well hear another one. Who goes next? Oh, we're all going to have ourselves weeping here in a matter of moments. Carla Shook in the role of Fantine. I dreamed a dream. You indicated that she's probably, you didn't exactly say this, probably the most tragic character from beginning to end.
I think she is. What happens to her in the first half an hour of the show, she's a woman that's had a bunch of hard knocks, and she's working so hard to provide for her daughter she's entrusted to these people who are writing her horrible letters that she's sick and she's cold, and because the girls in the factory, like, basically are jealous and don't like her, ultimately, like, cost her her job, and then what great lengths a mother will go to of selling your possessions, and in her instance, she sells her hair and
her teeth,
yeah. And then becomes a lady of the town, as with all that she's got left to sell. It's horrible.
It is. Well, deliver the goods.
Voices were soft and their words inviting. There was a time when love was blind and the world was a song and the song was exciting. There was a time then it all went wrong. Life worth living. I dreamed that love would never die. I dreamed that God would be forgiving. Then I was young and unafraid, and dreams were made and used and wasted. There was no ransom to be paid, no song unsung, no wine untasted. But the tigers come at night with their voices soft as thunder, as they tear your hope apart, as they turn your dream to shame. He slept a summer by my side. Filled my days with endless wonder. He took my childhood in his stride, but he was gone when autumn came. and still I dream he'll come to me. That we will live the years together. But there are dreams that cannot be. And there are storms we cannot weather. I had a dream my life would be so different from this hell I'm living, so different now from what it seemed. Now life has killed the dream I dreamed.
Carla Shook in the role of Fantine from Les Miserables, I Dreamed a Dream, live in our studio here on Live and Local on FM 90.9 from the production that will open February 22nd at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, Illinois. For me, and I imagine for a lot of people, that's the single most moving song in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember when I conducted it, it's been 7 years ago, with the student production of the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company. Every time we got to that song, halfway through, I couldn't see the orchestra anymore. You know, no matter how many times I heard it, and of course we had a very good young girl who was doing it. Annie Gould was her name. I don't know how I just remembered that. and you know, you delivered it beautifully. And when you were doing warm ups in the studio here before we actually started the live show. You and your colleagues were sort of smiling and you were singing, and then for this, all of a sudden, you know, in the performance moment, something clicked and you went out of it. And then when you finished the song, you're smiling again. And I'm sort of curious, just as an actress, and anybody else can address this too, because everybody's got to do it. What switches? What is the switch that you flip?
Yeah. What I will say about the way Les Miserables is constructed is I think musically and lyrically, it does a lot of the work for us. And I think the songs tell beautiful stories. And I think it's very easy to take Fantine's journey within that song. And so for me, in this room in front of my friends here in the studio, it's kind of just trying to go back into rehearsal and, you know, be in that place from where it goes of her being fired to singing that song to now cutting off her hair and, like, connecting those pieces. I'm a very smiley person in real life. Being serious is hard for me. So I have to, like, kind of shut off Carla and kind of jump into the script, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So do you just go into the script itself, or do you draw on some personal experience?
That's the kind of question I feel like we get asked a lot as actors.
Yeah. Depends on the moment, depends on the show, I guess.
Yeah. I think generally, yes, not particularly. I
mean, yes, which?
Generally, you can think about a time that you were, like, for me, my character, you know, I experienced unrequited love. So in a sort of general sense, I can sort of remember how that felt and try and, you know, bring that to the surface.
Mm-hmm. I'm someone who's extremely fortunate. I have loving parents, and I have no substantial hardships in my life. So I don't have, like, that dark place to go to of... Mm-hmm. You know, something like that. So for me, I just have to kind of be Fantine and just kind of, you know.
And I think you're right. The way this is written and even the music that helps you to go there.
Yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, honestly, just listening to the music, what's been written, what's there for you, just pulls you in immediately. I mean, I get shivers to this day sometimes just hearing, like, even the karaoke backing, you know, like, it's just, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, we don't, in fact, have an orchestra in the
right.
studio.
But we will have one at the Little Theater on the
yes,
Square.
We will.
Well done.
On the stage, I think you said.
On the stage, yeah. Yes.
15 pieces.
You know, Carla, you said something really nice about the song. You said Fantine's journey is contained within that song, which, in a way... For me, Express is one of the challenges I've had with the musical as a musical, And I wonder, since you all said you read the book, whether you found it a challenge before the reading the book, or whether the book helped you at all. And what I'm referring to is, you don't really know who she's talking about. There's just some guy,
correct,
you know, in the course of the song. When you read the book, you find out who this person was. You get the whole backstory and everything else. And all the songs are like that. The whole story is like that, as expressed in the musical, where you kind of have to imagine what might have happened. And then when you read the book, you find out what did happen. And for me, anyway, to enjoy the musical, reading the novel helped enormously.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think we all definitely took pieces away.
But most people haven't read the book, and yet they find it remarkably moving.
Yeah. I think it's helpful in the world today, because I do think people are more familiar with it, be it the movie or just they know there's a little girl on the poster. I think it's kind of easier for people to kind of ultimately know that right from the get-go she has this kid, that you know there's a Cosette in the story, and like you kind of piece it all together.
I think, at least for me, reading the book just gave those moments that are in the musical so much more depth. I mean, specifically, there are chapter upon chapter of Marius seeing Cosette in a park. And that's all it
is. And nothing happens.
Chapter after chapter, he walks past her, he sees her, he talks about how in love with her he's becoming, and that's it. But you don't see that in the musical. But it makes that first interaction between Marius and Cosette, when they bump into each other, for me, it just mm-hmm. fills that moment with so much, because there's already so much that the book has provided for me.
And likewise, many of the things that happened to Valjean.
Right.
You know a whole lot more of the story. In a way, the Fantine story is perhaps the most complete, because
you
see so much of it play out right on the stage.
That's true.
Right on the stage. The Little Theater production will open on February 22nd, close on March the 3rd. Lots of performances in between, some of them at night, some in the afternoon. You can get the full information by going to their website. We have a trio that we're going to hear, I believe. And it has to do with this love story.
Yes.
You know, both the unrequited love and the fully requited love. You know, the fully happy story at the end, I suppose the only one that ends up being thoroughly happy. Even Jean Valjean returns to, sort of has a tragic end.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which you understand best if you read the novel, what exactly happened to him.
Right, right.
Because there is a pretty sad, even sadder story to that. It's called A Heart Full of Love. Mm-hmm. And we'll hear it sung by Tim Courtier in the role of Marius, Amelia Millar in the role of Cosette, Ruthie Stevens in the role of Eponine on Live and Local.
A heart full of love, a heart full of song. I'm doing everything all wrong. Oh God, for shame, I do not even know your name. Dear Mademoiselle, won't you say, will you
tell? A heart full of love, no fear, no regret.
My name is Marius Pontmercy,
and mine's Cosette.
Cosette, I don't know what to say.
Then make no sound.
I am lost.
I am
a heart full of light, a night bright as day, and you must never go away. Cosette, Cosette,
this is a chain we'll never break.
Do I dream?
I'm
a heart full of love.
Amelia Millar as Cosette, Ruthie Stevens as Eponine, Tim Courtier as Marius, from Les Miserables, of course, and the Little Theater on the Square's production. Thanks to those three, and to Carla Shook in the role of Fantine, and to Madame Thénardier, played by Therese Kincaid, who we didn't get to hear.
No, so
we don't get to hear her.
Just going to have
comedic.
To wait for the
yeah. Because everything you do requires Monsieur Thénardier.
Just about. We had a power struggle the other day at rehearsal when we each talked about our own journey with our character, when I said, well, really, he thinks he's in charge. But I'm really in charge, and he said that's
he didn't
what you think, and hence the the conflict between the characters. So,
isn't that what marriage is all about?
Exactly.
Or so I'm told.
You just have to know when to keep your mouth shut.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Yes, it is. But you were talking about it is one of the most difficult things I have ever done. Although it seems like a small, because this beautiful 7-year-old little girl, Piper Countryman, who is young Cosette. Honestly, audience will melt into the aisle. And then I immediately come out and berate her and scream. And it's really quite difficult to do. And she's sort of flinching and looking at me. And it's a challenge. So she's a doll.
So she's flinching genuinely, which means you must be
occasionally
pretty nasty. So
yes,
nice job of acting.
I can be.
Because you look fairly smiley right
That's
here,
right.
just sort of
I
like
am.
Carla described herself. Well, you can get all the information you need on the Little Theater's production. I believe their website, which I didn't write down, is just thelittletheater.org.
www.thelittletheater.org. And might I mention that on Monday, single tickets are available for our summer season. They become available.
Already,
it's
okay.
Been season subscriptions up until now.
And all the shows, you can find out about all the shows. And not only the shows, but lots of other things that go on at the
exactly.
Little Theater, classes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you all very much for coming in, and break a leg, as they say.
Thank you
so much.
And here's a few other events you can go see and hear live in our listening area this weekend. There's a lot going, so I'm just going to sort of pick a few. I just have a couple of minutes. It's the Illinois Wesleyan Civic Orchestra Concerto Aria Concert tonight at 7:30 at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. The Great American Trailer Park Musical is being put on by Danville Light Opera in Danville tonight and tomorrow at 6:30. Sunday it's at 12:30. Jeff Helgeson Quintet is at the Iron Post coming up in just a couple of minutes. That's in downtown Urbana, followed by the Dan Pearson Trio at 8 o'clock, and then Miss Jubilee and the Humdingers at 11 o'clock tonight. The Prairie Dogs are at the Pink House in Ogden, also starting up in just a minute and a half at 5. It's Flat Stanley Jr., the musical at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield tonight at 7 o'clock, tomorrow also, and then Sunday at 2 o'clock also at the Hoagland Center. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, the Portuguese Rodeo Clown Company, which sounds awfully interesting. It's the annual Bluegrass Jam at Fithian Community Center tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. All Out A Cappella at Unity High School in Tolono tomorrow for two shows at 5 o'clock and at 8 o'clock. Sinfonia da Camera gives a concert called The Solar System at the Krannert Center in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30. It's the 10th annual Civil War Ball with music by the Ruldugeri Band, not sure I said that right, at the Illinois Veterans Home, Lippincott Hall in Quincy tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Support for WILL today comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available on the Corkscrew's Facebook page. This is 90.9 WILL FM and HD Urbana, with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Kevin Kelly for Live and Local. Thanks for listening.